everywhere. Yes, that's right. And we are having a seminar about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. It's interesting, it's historical. There are a number of nice stories and different events which happened in the lives of these great devotees. And we can learn some lessons from these things too. Okay, so let us begin. You can repeat after me, please. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes, well, devotees, again, thank you for coming. It's nice to have your association. Hope everyone's happy in Krishna consciousness. Hope everyone's chanting their rounds. Are you chanting your rounds? Oh, that is just wonderful. Thank you. Right. Well, that's the way to be happy in Krishna consciousness. So we started last night and we gave a little introduction. Who are the six Goswamis? Who they are actually also in the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Vrindavan. Yes, they are associated, they have personal relationships with Lord Chaitanya, of course, who was here 500 years ago, but they also have personal relationships with Lord Krishna. With Lord Krishna, they are in female forms as six of the main manjaris. But with Lord Chaitanya, they're in male forms. But because they're such close associates of Lord Krishna, then in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, when they are delineating and describing so many facts and different points about Krishna consciousness and about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, because of the very intimate connection with Krishna, so they're able to give very wonderful information in their association with Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to continue. I will begin. First of all, I'll just read that very nice verse from Srinivas Acharya, which Srila Prabhupada gives as the dedication at the beginning of Nectar of Devotion, which was written by Rupa Goswami. And actually today we're going to talk mainly about Rupa Goswami. Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Sri Jiva Gopalako. So translation, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they are honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. So, Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prestai Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Niravishesha Shunyavadi Vastyachari Jatarini Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gauravakta Vrenda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkap Taribhyas Chakribhya Sindhu Bhyevacha Paridhanu Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. And just another verse, we're repeating a few verses here right now. One more verse. Which is there in our Mangala Charana basically indicates a whole sequence of verses in which respects are offered and glorification is offered to all the main people in our line, in our disciplic succession. Yes, so there, the following verse appears, glorifying Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who is established within this material world, the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet. So, let's see. Srila Rupa Goswami. You know, Srila Prabhupada, just before Prabhupada came to the Western world, he stayed actually for a few years. Several years, he stayed in some rooms at the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. And those rooms are still there. We have sort of occupation of those rooms till today. And they're sort of like a little museum dedicated to Prabhupada. Why don't you go to Mummy? You should go to Mummy. That's the right thing to do. Yes, be a good boy. Right, so those rooms there, if you go in, you'll see, if you go to the left, is Prabhupada's kitchen, and where he would take prasadam. And at the end where he would, sort of the right hand, when you enter the right hand side, he would sit and take prasadam. There's a window looking out onto the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. And Srila Prabhupada said that every day he would sit there and he would offer prayers to Rupa Goswami. That you are the great, the leader, the chief of the six Goswamis. And under your direction and guidance and supervision, all those Goswamis together, individually and together, they all laid the foundations and the plans for how to spread the movement of Lord Chaitanya into this modern age and into the future, even from now. So Prabhupada would pray to Rupa Goswami as the chief of the six Goswamis, please help me, empower me, give me some mercy, so that I'll be able to take your mission forward. So, Rupa Goswami then, let's see. We mentioned yesterday how Rupa Goswami and his brother Sanatan, they had been engaged in the government, the Muslim government of Bengal. At that time means like the early-ish 1500s. They were extremely expert. And so they're engaged by the, not exactly king, but the ruler of Bengal at that time, Nawab Hussain Shah. But after a while, after they had met Lord Chaitanya, they decided, that's it. That's enough. Enough of material life. And let's just get out of here and just go and join Lord Chaitanya. So they did. It's a long story. Rupa Goswami, actually, he just immediately left. Sanatan Goswami was the prime minister, the main person in the government, so he felt he couldn't just disappear. So he stayed on, but he was making a plan how to escape. But Rupa Goswami just immediately left. You know, it's an interesting point that the two of them, they were born in traditional Brahmin families and high-level Brahmin families. I don't know how familiar all or any of you are with the sort of old structure of Indian society or the caste system. But the Brahmins are at the head of society, and not all Brahmins are equal, so there are different levels of Brahmins. They were Saraswat Brahmins, means the highest level of Brahmins. And but because they had been engaged in the government of the Muslims and were working very closely with the majority of the people they were working with were Muslims, and they were given Muslim names and they would dress as Muslims just to sort of fit in with the scene. So after they joined Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya accepted them and made him like the leaders of his movement, but still they, because of that involvement, not exactly the involvement, but just sort of the stigma through having been connected with the Muslims, they always maintained very, very humble positions. Extremely. Even to the point that at that time, and even in, to some degree today, in some of the main temples in East India, they would not allow non-Hindus to enter. So they just voluntarily, they wouldn't enter. They could have entered, but they wouldn't enter, and they never entered. Like when Lord Chaitanya was living in Jagannath Puri, and they were not exactly living with him, but they would visit from time to time. We mentioned last night, Sanatana Goswami at one point stayed for a year in Puri, and associating very closely with Lord Chaitanya, but he would never go into the temple because he didn't want to upset the locals, who are sort of very attached to these conceptions, which they're still very attached to today. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Rupa Goswami, he left his work in the Muslim government, went and met Lord Chaitanya in Varanasi, and Lord Chaitanya, or at Allahabad actually, it's just not too far from Varanasi, and Lord Chaitanya instructed him there for 10 days. Those instructions, if you're familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita, they make up the 19th chapter of the Madhya Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And those instructions form the foundation of Nectar of Devotion, which is one of our main books, Nectar of Devotion. It's sort of like the handbook, how to practice Krishna consciousness. So here's another verse. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 19, verse 1, in which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author, explains the position of Rupa Goswami and his significance and the significance of the instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave him. Vrindavaniyam rasakeli vartam kalena luptam nija shakti utka sancharya rupe vyatanot punasa prabhurvido prag iva lokasrishtim. Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation, the Lord enlightened the heart of Lord Brahma with the details of the creation and manifested the Vedic knowledge. In exactly the same way, Lord Chaitanya, being anxious to revive the Vrindavan pastimes of Lord Krishna, impregnated the heart of Rupa Goswami with spiritual potency. By this potency, Srila Rupa Goswami could revive the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, activities almost lost to memory. In this way, he spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So there are the instructions given to Rupa Goswami by Lord Chaitanya in those 10 days in Allahabad. They're compared, or they're equal to, on the same level as the pastimes of Lord Krishna, which he gave to Lord Brahma at the beginning of creation. They're there at the end, towards the end of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Very foundational and very, very significant. Like practically the most significant of all instructions. So Rupa Goswami, he was the leader of the six Goswamis. He wrote 100,000 verses. To give us an idea what 100,000 verses means, Bhagavad Gita is 700. Bhagavad Gita is 700 verses. And each verse is generally just four little lines, like a little poem. Srila Rupa Goswami wrote 100,000 verses. And some of them are a page long. They're really serious verses. Very profound, incredibly profound verses. So Rupa Goswami, he stayed in Vrindavan, where the Radha Damodar temple is now. He stayed near Nandagram. How many of you have been to Vrindavan before? You've been to Vrindavan before. A few of you, not so many. You haven't been? Really? You must tell Mummy and Daddy to take you. So in Vrindavan, in Vrajmandala, the greater Vrindavan area, there's a place called Nandagram, where Krishna lived when he was like 7, 8, 9, 10. Krishna lived first of all in Gokula as a child, up to about the age of 4. Then he moved to where the current day Vrindavan town is and stayed there till he was about 7. And then he moved to Nandagram at around 7 or thereabouts and stayed there until he was around 12, actually, around 12. And then at that point, Krishna left Vrindavan from Nandagram. And today there's a road going out from Nandagram, the road to Mathura. That's the road that Krishna took. So just out from Nandagram, maybe a kilometer out into the fields, is a very nice little place called Nandagram. They're called Tirkadamba. Tirkadamba. Kadamba is a particular type of tree. And along with staying in Vrindavan, where current day Vrindavan town is some of the time, he would stay there also at Tirkadamba and write. So there are all sorts of amazing descriptions. For example, when Rupa Goswami would write about Radha and Krishna, now they're together, but then they separate. They get separated somehow or other. Their interactions are interrupted. Someone comes to disturb their relationship. So they have to separate and just even sometimes run to escape. So when he would write about such things, there at Tirkadamba, which even today it's a nice little forest area with beautiful flowering trees around the kund, like a small lake there. So when he would write how Radha and Krishna at some point, they would be separated. Then the flowers on the trees, all the flowers would fall off. They'd all just drop off, just in sort of harmony with his mood and the mood of the particular pastime he was writing about. But then, when he would then, after a little while, write about Radha and Krishna then meeting again shortly after, then all the trees, all those flowering plants, all of them would blossom again, right on the spot. They would all blossom again. So it was a very amazing place. And it's still a very amazing place. There's a description of how Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, sometimes we talk about separation from Krishna as being like a fire, a blazing fire of separation. We have all experienced some separation, I'm sure. I mean, unless you're very young. But all of us adults, we've all experienced some separation. Maybe our parents died and we felt separation from them. Maybe some other family member or someone very close died and we felt separation. You know, like that, someone very close went away, moved away, escaped South Africa and went to Australia or somewhere and didn't come back. And so we felt separation from losing the association of that person. And sometimes people get very devastated if they lose someone who is really very close to them. But when you lose the association of Krishna, a relationship with Krishna is far deeper. We cannot really comprehend. But just let us say that it's far deeper than any relationships that we have or have had. Just the sort of normal relationships that people have in life in this world. So that separation, Lord Chaitanya, in the mood of Radharani, Lord Chaitanya talks about that, how extreme it is. Yugaitam nameshena chakshusha pravishaitam shunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename, that when I am separated from Krishna, then one moment, that the Sanskrit term is nimesh, yugaitam nimeshena. If I am separated from Krishna for one moment, like a split second, not even 1 second, just a split fraction of a second, then that little, just hardly any time at all, it feels yugaitam. It feels like a yuga. Or, as Prabhupada translates, it feels like 12 years or more. For us, it's really hard. We can't truly grasp the real import of it all. But at least we can get the basic idea that that association with Krishna is just so amazing that if we lose it, if we have it and then we lose it, then, well, just a split second of that separation feels like years. So therefore, well, sometimes when the whole idea of being separated from Krishna, having his association, but then being separated from him, when that idea is there, then sometimes it's said that it's like a blazing fire. It's just so overwhelming and devastating. So therefore, one time at Tirthakadamba, Rupa Goswami was there with some other devotees. And they were discussing about Krishna and his pastimes and his devotees and their relationships. But then somehow the talk went into the subject of separation and what it feels like, what the experience of being separated from Krishna is like. And all the devotees, it stated, felt like the blazing fire of separation, and particularly Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami, he breathed on one devotee, and his breath was so hot that the devotee's body became burnt and blistered. Can we comprehend that? Not really. It's beyond our experience. It's beyond our experience. Anyway, a related little pastime. Rupa Goswami wrote, like we said, 100,000 verses. And a whole lot of them are in the form of a drama. Well, two dramas, in fact. One drama is about Krishna in Vrindavan. The other drama is about Krishna in Dwarka, after Krishna had left Vrindavan. Krishna went to Dwarka and became like a prince in Dwarka. So there, that second drama about Krishna in Dwarka, it is called Lalita Madhava. Lalita Madhava. Lalita means playful, and Madhava is the name of Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune, so playful Krishna. But that drama begins, there are 10 acts, it is like a 3 or 4 hour, or I don't know, maybe 5 hour drama. It's really a major thing. But it begins with Krishna leaving Vrindavan, and all the devotees in Vrindavan being thrown into like a bottomless ocean of separation from Krishna. Very amazing feelings of having lost Krishna. And a number of the devotees of Vrindavan died. A number of them died. So Rupa Goswami wrote that. But then he gave it to another one of the 6 Goswamis, Raghunath Das, who will... Maybe we could turn off our phones if we've got them on. You know, it's bad manners, you know that. At work, you know, in the banks and places like that. You must turn your phone off. So Lalita Madhava. Rupa Goswami sent the manuscript to Raghunath Das Goswami to like edit and check and make comments for possible, you know, alterations and improvements maybe. So Raghunath Das started reading Lalita Madhava, the first act, which is all about Krishna leaving Vrindavan and these devotees dying, and it is just super dramatic. And Raghunath Das became overwhelmed in separation. In fact, his state of ecstatic separation reached such a point that, you know, there's certain symptoms of ecstasy, like tears, shivering of the body, goose pimples. His body was shaking so strongly, the joints started separating from each other. Joints started separating. And the devotees saw what was happening. And the devotees realized this is too much for his material body. His body will die. So they tried to stop him from reading Lalita Madhava. They tried to stop him. But he said, no. Rupa Goswami, my senior, he has ordered me to edit this book. I must read this book. He wouldn't stop. But then the symptoms became even stronger and they realized he's going to die just now. This was happening at Radha Kund. So they sent a message to Rupa Goswami in Vrindavan. It's about 25 kilometers away. You got to do something. You got to take that book away from him. He's got to stop reading the book. So what Rupa Goswami did, he did a very amazing thing. Rupa Goswami quickly, in about one day, wrote another drama. It is called Dan Kali Komudi. Komudi, it means a type of lotus flower, blue lotus flower. The lotus flower of the tax collecting pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So in that pastime, in that drama, in the pastime described there, Radha and Krishna meet and they have a wonderful, ecstatic, blissful time. Just so happy. Negotiating and arguing about paying tax, whether the gopis should pay tax for crossing over Govardhan Hill. So then Rupa Goswami took that play out to Radha Kund and gave it to Raghunath Das and said, emergency, you must edit this book right now. We want to publish it immediately. And give me the other one back. Give me Lalita Madhava back. I want to make some alterations. So it was the order of Rupa Goswami. And Raghunath Das immediately gave Lalita Madhava back and started reading Dan Kali Komudi. And there are Radha and Krishna meeting and joking and laughing. And it's very sort of jolly, happy pastime. And Raghunath Das became pacified and survived. Here's another interesting little story about Rupa Goswami and his writing. And with Sanatan Goswami also. Famous story. Rupa Goswami wrote a poem called Chatu Pushpanjali. Four offerings of flowers at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. It's basically a description of Radharani. Very beautiful, very, very beautiful description. But in the first verse, and actually it's available, there are translations even today. In the first verse, as Srila Rupa Goswami begins his description of the beauty of Radharani, he describes her hair. She keeps her hair. She has long black hair. And she keeps her hair in a single plait. A single plait, which hangs down her back, right down her back. And the poem says, when Radharani walks, her plait, her long black plait, moves. And when her plait moves, it looks like a black snake. Hare Krishna, a black snake. So Rupa Goswami gave this to Sanatan Goswami to edit and make suggestions. And Sanatan Goswami, he started reading, and first thing he read, Radharani, how her splat moves, and it looks like a black snake. And Sanatan Goswami thought, what? A black snake? Radharani? How could it be? No, that's not proper. That's not, how could he say that? How could he say that? She's Radharani. How can he compare her to a snake? But he's Rupa Goswami. How could he say something wrong? So he entered into a state of just perplexity. What to do? What to do? A little later, or even a few days later, Rupa Goswami returned. This was also at Radhakund, Shyamakund. And Rupa Goswami asked him, so have you finished the editing? And Sanatan didn't know what to say. Well, yes, just now coming. Just hold on, don't hold your breath. But Sanatan didn't know what to do. He didn't even want to suggest that maybe this is a mistake. So Sanatan Goswami went and sat on the banks of Shyamakund, his place, one of his places of residence was there. And there's and sort of like a little monument there now, Bhajan Kutir of Sanatan Goswami. While Rupa Goswami is waiting, Sanatan Goswami is just sitting there on the banks of the Kund with the manuscript, and he just didn't know what to do. At that moment, a group of young girls, about 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, how old are you? Just see, I thought so. And you're about 9, 10, just like our two girls here. This group of young girls came out onto the banks of Shyamakund, just immediately opposite on the other side. It's not even 50 meters, it might be 30 meters across at that point. And they started playing a ball game, throwing a ball back and forth and jumping and laughing and, you know, just carrying on having a good time. And while this is going on, Sanatan Goswami is watching them. And as he looked at one of them, one of these young girls had a long plait, single plait of black hair hanging down her back. Sanatan Goswami looked at her, and Sanatan Goswami thought, there is a snake on her back. A black snake is climbing up her back. It's going to bite her. So Sanatan Goswami jumped up and shouted, look out! Snake! Snake! Look out! And the girls were shocked. Snake! Where's the snake? It's on her back! And they looked on her back, this one particular girl, and they started roaring with laughter. That's not a snake. That's her hair. And they laughed and laughed, and Sanatan Goswami felt embarrassed. But then suddenly they vanished. They didn't just quickly run away. Suddenly they were not there. And Sanatan Goswami understood that was Radharani and the gopis. And they appeared like that just to show me that whatever Rupa Goswami says is right. It's always right. So immediately felt very enlivened and encouraged. At that moment, Rupa Goswami walked up and said, You have to give me the manuscript. I have to take it. And Sinan said, okay, I finished. It's good. It's really nice. And Rupa said, no, you tell me, please, tell me, what do you really think? And Sinan Goswami said, it is really nice. Particularly the part about the black snake, that's just wonderful. So you can read it. You can read that poem, Chatu Pushpanjali. Very nice. Another time, Rupa Goswami was living at Tiakadamba, we mentioned, not far from Nandagram. Sanatan Goswami was also living just around, it's about, say, like 3 kilometers away from Tiakadamba, just around on the other side of Nandagram. Nandagram is a village on a hill. So it was just around on the other side of the hill. And it was his birthday. It was the birthday, the appearance day of Sanatan Goswami. And Rupa Goswami, who's his younger brother, he wanted to do something, give him something, express his appreciation and affection for his older brother. But he's just living in the forest. He didn't have anything. There was no pick and pay. Would you believe? There was life before pick and pay. Yes. Well, I remember when I first went to India in 1976, you couldn't even buy bottled water. You couldn't buy. The only thing you could buy was Limca. You know what Limca is? It's a lemon, fizzy lemon drink made from an Italian recipe which was banned by the Italian government as being poisonous. So they sold it to some people in India. Okay, anyway. So he's just living there in the forest. And he really wanted to give something, do some service for Sanatan Goswami. No shoes. Best to stay out. Just stay out. He wanted to do something for Sanatan Goswami, but what could he do? Couldn't do anything. So he's sitting there feeling a little upset. Suddenly, from the forest, emerged one young girl, village girl. And she was carrying 3 pots, like clay pots. And she just handed them to Rupa Goswami. Actually, he had been thinking, I would like to make some sweet rice. Do you like sweet rice? Yes. Me too. I would like to make some sweet rice for my elder brother, but what to do? So this girl just walked up and said, here, take this. Bang. Now he had the 3 pots. One was a pot of milk. One was a pot of sugar. One was a pot of rice. Ha ha. Ingredients for sweet rice. And he's looking at this, you know, what happened here? Because, you know, she just came out of the forest. People generally didn't move through the forests much. And he's looking at these things, then he thought, oh, I must thank her. He looked up, she had also vanished. Well, actually, before she vanished, she told Rupa that there was a wedding in the village. And this was left over. This was left over. And my mother told me, go out into the forests, find some baba, and just give it to him. so there, take it. So Rupa Goswami wanted to thank her, but when he looked up, she had vanished. Okay, anyway, so he cooked some sweet rice. As he was cooking, he's smelling. You know, I mean, he couldn't, because we don't normally, when we're cooking, we definitely don't taste when we're cooking. No, we don't taste. And generally, we don't even really sort of, you know, sniff it. But you can't avoid smelling something. So every now and then, some, you know, fragrance would come and they'd think, wow, what sort of sweet rice am I making? This is so fragrant. I never smelled anything like it. So anyway, he made it, he offered it, and then he took it around to the other side and gave it to Sanatan Goswami as a birthday present. And Sanatan Goswami, he just took one mouthful and became stunned. And he said, where did you get this? Where did you get the ingredients for this? And Rupa said, well, there was this one young girl, and she just walked up there and gave these things to me. She said there was a wedding in the village, and this was left over, and I just cooked it, and here it is. And Sanatan Goswami said, I'm living here on the edge of the village. There was no wedding in the village. There was no wedding. That was Srimati Radharani. And now you have engaged Radharani in my service. And he said, I have tasted Jagannath Mahaprasad. I have tasted the remnants of Lord Chaitanya himself, but I've never tasted anything like this. This is terrible. You have engaged Radharani in my service. And he started crying in regret, in humility. Then after some, maybe a minute, he stopped crying. And he said, pass me that sweet rice again. And then he and Rupa Goswami, they ate all the sweet rice. And they were just in complete ecstasy. So this also happened there. Well, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami were living out there in near Nandagram. Another very significant thing. Let me just mention one thing further. That Lord Chaitanya, he is Krishna, but in the mood of Radharani. In the mood of Radharani means she is there. She is present. We mentioned the verse last night. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Nahe Anya. That Lord Krishna Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, is none other than Radha and Krishna. They're two persons in one body. It's a little incomprehensible for us, but that's the situation. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, but in the mood of Radharani, in the mood of being a devotee, but not just any devotee, like one of the regular devotees from PE. In the mood of Radharani, the topmost of the topmost devotees. So he was always in that sort of mood, particularly in Jagannath Puri. But it would come out particularly during the Rath Yatra. during the Ratha Yatra, if you know the background, I know we have Ratha Yatras here. When was our last Ratha Yatra? You remember? When?
A couple of years back.
No. March. Just see. At the beachfront. I heard about it. I was there a couple of times up in Malabar.
Yeah, Malabar.
Right. Haven't been for a little while. So anyway, Ratha Yatra. What is Ratha Yatra? Ratha Yatra means that, well, the story, the background is that Lord Krishna had left Vrindavan many years before and gone to Mathura, and then from Mathura gone to Dwarka. So many years before he had left Vrindavan. But one time there was a great solar eclipse. And the tradition is, not just the tradition, but it's really the sensible thing to do. When there is an eclipse, particularly if it's like a really full eclipse, a complete eclipse, you don't go outside in the eclipse. Or if you go outside, you should immerse yourself in some sacred waters, like a river or lake, like the Ganges or something like that, and just chant and chant and chant through the eclipse to ward off the inauspicious effects of the eclipse. It's very negative, extremely negative influence, an eclipse. So this was a really big eclipse. And so all Krishna and all the residents of Dwarka, they all traveled all the way. It's a long way. It's hundreds, even a couple of thousand kilometers to Kurukshetra, which is a very sacred place. And there at Kurukshetra is what they call Brahma Sarova. It's a big sacred lake, said to be the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. It is a big sacred lake. It's still there. So Krishna and all his associates from Dwarka went there. And Nanda Maharaj and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they also went there. And so Krishna and the devotees of Vrindavan, they met again for the first time since Krishna had left Vrindavan many years before. And you know, it's a long story. It's another one of our very long stories. But at the end, when the eclipse was finished and all the ceremonies and whatever were finished, and it was time to go home, Srimati Radharani and the gopis approached Krishna and told him that when you left, you promised you'd return, but you have not returned. And Krishna tried to sort of procrastinate and say, well, you know, just now coming, when I'm traveling, like particularly in Russia, sometimes I tell the local devotees there about the South African use of the word now. Yeah. That if you say, I'm coming now, it means, you know, I'm coming. I'll be there. Yeah, sometime. Don't hold your breath, but I will be there. If you say, I'm coming now, it means I'm coming quite soon. Yeah, quite soon. And if you say, I'm coming now, it means I'm coming now. In normal language. So yeah, Krishna said like that, I'm coming.
I'm just now coming. Don't worry. You just go home. I'll be there shortly. And the gopi said, that's what you told us. It was like 60 years before. You told us you'll just be back. Just now you'll be back. But you haven't come back. So we are taking you. And they put Krishna on his chariot and Balaram and Subhadra on their chariots, tied ropes to the chariots, and pulled them all the way back to Vrindavan. So when we have Rath Yatra, we are reenacting that. The deities, Jagannath deities, are on the chariot, Krishna, Balaram, Subhadra, they're there. And we're taking the roles of the devotees of Vrindavan, pulling the chariot. So when Lord Chaitanya, when he was staying there in Jagannath Puri, when he would participate in the Rath Yatra, his mood as Srimati Radharani, it was always there, but now at that time it would really come up to the top, and he would start speaking prayers that Radharani had spoken at Kurukshetra that time, at the time of the eclipse or just after the eclipse. But no one could understand, why is Lord Chaitanya reciting these prayers? No one could understand, except Rupa Goswami. So Lord Chaitanya, he would speak this verse. Listen to this. That very personality who stole my heart during my youth is now again my master. These are the same moonlit nights of the month of Chaitra. The same fragrance of Malati flowers is there. And the same sweet breezes are blowing from the Kadamba forest. In our intimate relationship, I'm also the same lover. Yet still my mind is not happy here. I'm eager to go back to that place, on the bank of the Reva, under the Vetasi tree. That is my desire. So this is a prayer of Radharani to Krishna at Kurukshetra. We are reunited. I am the same person. And you are the same person. And we are meeting again. But still I'm not satisfied. I want that we go back to Vrindavan on the bank of the Yamuna. And we can meet there as we met so many years ago. So come back. You must come back. So then, what Rupa Goswami did, because he understood, this is actually what Lord Chaitanya is saying. He's entering completely into the mood of Radharani. And he's speaking this prayer to Jagannath, who is Krishna, and telling Krishna, it's nice we're meeting here, but you must come back. You must come back to Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami, understanding what Lord Chaitanya was saying, he wrote a verse which is sort of extending and clarifying that verse. Please listen. This is Rupa Goswami's verse, just expressing the mind of Radharani, the mind of Lord Chaitanya. My dear friend, now I've met my very old and dear friend Krishna on this field of Kurukshetra. I am the same Radharani, and now we are meeting together. It is very pleasant, but I would still like to go to the bank of the Yamuna, beneath the trees of the forest there. I wish to hear the vibration of his sweet flute, playing the fifth note within that forest of Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami wrote that verse, and then he wrote it in Jagannath Puri. Lord Chaitanya was there. Rupa Goswami left the verse somehow or other. It was written on leaf. He just stuck it in the roof of his hut. And Lord Chaitanya, and then went to bathe in the ocean. Lord Chaitanya in the meantime came to meet with him and saw this leaf sticking out of the roof with something written on it. And Lord Chaitanya took out the leaf and saw what he had written and understood. He has understood my mind. He has actually understood my feelings. So later, a little later, when there was a gathering of some of the very great devotees, Ramananda Roy, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and various others, Lord Chaitanya took them to meet Rupa Goswami, and he explained how Rupa Goswami had understood his mind, and then asked them, he actually asked Ramananda Roy, who was a dramatist, he asked him, please read some of these verses written by Rupa Goswami and give me your comments. Tell me what you think. So Ramananda read some verses and just became amazed. This person, you have given Rupa Goswami your mercy. That's the only way he could understand. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're right. I gave him my mercy in Allahabad. And Ramananda Roy said, this is the most amazing verse. I mean, these are the most amazing verses I've ever read. And he said, just to express the extraordinary nature of those verses, he said, what is the use of a bowman's arrow or a poet's poetry if they penetrate the heart but do not cause the head to spin? In other words, what's the point of shooting someone with an arrow if you don't kill them? Or what's the use of poetry if it doesn't just completely captivate a person and just completely take them away? So Rupa Goswami was like that. Yes, just most amazing devotee and writer, appreciated so much by Lord Chaitanya. And particularly he read Nectar of Devotion, particularly he wrote Nectar of Devotion. If you haven't read Nectar of Devotion, you must read it. Is that okay? Have you read it? Oh, you have? Not yet. Working on it. Can you just work on it? You can do it. Yeah. You can read, right? Of course you can. Yeah. So, good girl. It just explains, how to develop Krishna consciousness, how to develop love for Krishna. Have you read Nectar of Devotion? Not yet? I'll check next time, okay? Yes, Rupa Goswami wrote that book. And it's, if you read that book nicely, very attentively, then by the time you've finished, you will have practically developed love for Krishna. It is so clear, and it is so powerful spiritually. Yes, that it can elevate anyone from the beginning stages, the very beginning stages or even pre-beginning stages, right up to the level of perfection. All by the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami. Hare Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami ki. So we got a few questions here. Let's quickly try to answer them.
First page is from yesterday. First page is from yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Why did Lord Chaitanya not come in a female form? Whew. Isn't that an interesting question? Well, I'll tell you the main reason is because he's Krishna. And Krishna is a he. Well, Krishna is everything, actually, but he manifests in what we would call a male form. But Lord Chaitanya, like we said, he was in that mood of Radharani, the mood of a devotee. And you might say, well, Radharani's female. But her mood is not just female. Her mood is the mood of a devotee, beyond male and female, these material conceptions. You know, men are like this, women are like that. What do they say? Women are from Venus, is it? And men are from Mars? Is that what they say? Something like that. You know, like different species. Would you say that's right?
Sometimes.
Very good answer. Well done. Yeah. So, you know, men, sometimes, it depends, you know, I mean, it really does depend, but at least generally men are thought to be sort of harder and stronger. Is that right? And women are softer and gentler, would you say? Sometimes.
Yes, sometimes.
Okay. Well, Margaret Thatcher, she wasn't so gentle. Indira Gandhi. Anyway. Right. The motherly sort of mood. Yeah, something like that. So the devotional mood is not just, you know, it's some sort of, it's beyond these male and female considerations. Yeah. So therefore it wasn't like when Lord Chaitanya was speaking that verse, we read that verse, in the mood of Radharani, appealing to Krishna, you've got to come back. It's nice meeting you again, but it's just to be complete, you must come back to Vrindavan. Yeah. But it's not like he went into what you might call in a sort of material sense, like an effeminate type of condition, if you know what I mean. Yeah, not like that. Because it's not male-female, it's devotional. And it's beyond such considerations. So, but you know, Lord Krishna does manifest an actual female form as Mohini. The Mohini incarnation is Krishna, but in an actual female form. But otherwise, generally, Krishna appears, and even like Lord Chaitanya in what is, you know, you would say is basically like a male form. Okay. Here's an interesting little question. I heard that part of the Tirupati meeting was ISKCON having female gurus. Now you may or may not be aware, I don't know, but we just came back yesterday from Tirupati. We were in Tirupati the day before yesterday. And we had our governing body meetings, GBC meetings, and there it was decided that ladies can become gurus and give initiation. So, yeah, so it's a fact. Anyway, up until now, a few Sundays ago, it was only men who could do that. And actually, in the history of our line, I mean, let me say, the decision for ladies to become gurus was based on statements made by Prabhupada that ladies can become gurus, although he said not many. Yeah. Because generally it's taken, you know, being a guru is sort of, you could say, like a position of leadership where you have to give support to people and even sometimes a lot of people. And therefore, you know, it may be that the male nature is a little sort of more in keeping with the responsibilities involved. But there have been a few. There have been a few ladies in our line who had disciples. But they were very unusual ladies. Janava, the wife of Lord Nityananda, or first wife, main wife, not an ordinary human being. And a few others, Gangamata Goswamini, also a very extraordinary person. So there are examples, but not many, and Prabhupada said it can happen, but not so many. What was Sanatana Goswami's devotion or activities that he got to bind Madan Mohan? Well, that we talked about yesterday. Well, the question was from yesterday. That because Sanatana Goswami was such a great devotee, so dedicated to Krishna in the form of Madan Mohan, that Madan Mohan, the deity, decided he wanted to come with him. And he wouldn't take anything else. You know, there in Bhagavad Gita in the 12th chapter, verses 13 to 20, Lord Krishna explains different qualities, which if a devotee has those qualities, he appreciates the devotee. He likes those qualities so much, he becomes attracted to a devotee if the devotee has those or some of those qualities. And Prabhupada, there's a class of Prabhupada's on the first two verses there, 13 and 14, chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada begins by saying, this is Krishna consciousness. How will Krishna love me? How will Krishna love me? In other words, how can I become such a person that Krishna will feel I cannot live without this person? I must have this person, Krishna, to feel like that. So when Krishna feels like that about you, then he may just take you. And then, you know, take you back to Godhead because he feels he wants your association so much. So Sanatana Goswami was such a devotee that Krishna felt, I must be in his association. Even if it's very difficult for me, Krishna's thinking. Even if Krishna felt very uncomfortable just traveling around Vrindavan, sleeping under trees, and not even the same tree, different trees every night. No shelter, practically nothing to eat. But Krishna felt, Sanam Goswami, he is such a wonderful devotee, I want to be with him so much that I don't care if I'm uncomfortable, if there's nothing to eat. I just want to be with him. In a sense, that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. How can we, through practicing and developing as devotees, develop such devotion and love for the Lord that he feels he can't do without us? That's Krishna consciousness. And then he will take us. Okay, here's a couple more questions, devotees. Don't worry. We will have, what will we have? We'll have Arati, is it? And Damodarastika?
Yes.
Okay, and then we'll have Prasadam. You know that it's better to wait for Prasadam a little longer? You know that? In Russia, there's a saying. It translates to, hunger is the best chef. The more hungrier you are, the better it tastes. And even something you don't like will end up just tasting wonderful. When should we distribute the Mahaprasadam?
At the end of the end.
We brought from Tirupati some Balaji Mahaprasadam. Tirumala, actually. Tirupati is the city at the bottom. Tirumala is where the temple is. On top of and back of it into the hills there. So yeah, we'll give you all a little bit. But be warned, it is very powerful. It may transform you in unexpected ways. You may find yourself just dancing and chanting madly, uncontrollably. Your hair may fall out, like mine, anyway. Okay, let's see. So yes, you said Prabhupada would offer daily prayers to Rupa Goswami. Why would he do that? Knowing well that Rupa Goswami is an eternal devotee of the Lord. Well, he would do that because he knew Rupa Goswami is there. It's not like, you know, he died 450 years ago or whatever it was. So he's dead and gone. And this is just like a monument. But no, he's living there. He's present there. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about Haridas Thakur, he reasons ill who thinks that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. The Vaishnav dies to live, and while living, spreads the holy names around. So because he knew Rupa Goswami is there, and he's the great leader of the six Goswamis, so he would pray. And Prabhupada said sometimes he would see Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami would speak to him. Can you describe what a day looked like in Rupa Goswami's shoes? Well, you know what? You know what? I'll tell you one thing. You should all come tomorrow night at 6 or so, and Tuesday night, because we're going to talk about Raghunath Das Goswami, one of those nights. I'm not sure which one, but one of them. And we know the details of his schedule, how he conducted himself, how he lived every day, Raghunath Das. And Rupa Goswami basically lived the same way. So not exactly timings, but just the different things he'd do. Raghunath Das, first of all, he would chant 64 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra. Second thing, He would then give a class for a minimum of 3 hours on Lord Chaitanya, or more than 3 hours. Then he would offer obeisances prostrated on the ground 1,000 times to different deities which were there, you know, around the sacred places where he was staying. Then, devotees, fasten your seatbelts. He would then offer obeisances on the ground 2,000 times to devotees, different devotees. And then he'd do some writing, 100,000 verses. And he would, half an hour out of 24, he would sleep. And half an hour, he would bathe and sort of, you know, take care of bodily functions. And half an hour or so, he would eat. Almost nothing. A cup. Just a leaf cup, if you're familiar with Indian little sort of patal, patras, whatever they call them, of buttermilk only. But oftentimes he would forget, because he'd just be so absorbed in his spiritual program. And therefore, after 3 or 4 or 5 days, sometimes a devotee would have to remind him, you know, you have not slept for 4 days. You haven't eaten for 4 days. Oh, okay. So then he might take a little rest. In other words, these are like superhuman personalities. Okay, well, this question here, please let us know how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world and taught us Prema Bhakti. You know, the fact is we don't know how Lord Chaitanya left this world. There are no authoritative. There are a couple of descriptions by some people who are kind of like questionable people. But there are no descriptions from authoritative devotees how Lord Chaitanya left this world. You know, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was living at that time. He lived on for quite a number of years after Lord Chaitanya left this world. And he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is thousands of verses. He doesn't talk about it, doesn't mention it, no mention. Same with Chaitanya Bhagavat, the second authoritative book, no mention. And the author lived on for many years after Lord Chaitanya left. Chaitanya Mangala, no mention. Because it doesn't really matter. The Lord comes, the Lord goes. Doesn't really matter so much. Main thing is what he taught. And Lord Chaitanya taught us to chant Hare Krishna. So we must chant Hare Krishna. Yes, preferably not less than 16 rounds. You're chanting your rounds? Not less than 16? Not so often. How many? Okay. But normally? Five or six? Really? What a good girl. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Go Premanande. Jai.